Okay, more about this concept of aromaticity, which comes from having cyclic conjugation, where the two ends of the conjugated system touch one another and make another bond. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Got the wrong one here. There we go. Okay, thank you. Okay, we were talking about some heteroaromatics that had atoms in the ring with unshared pairs, and mentioned that furan was an example of something that's aromatic by that criterion. So if we look at it, so there's going to be an unshared pair. There are two unshared pairs on the oxygen that's coming toward you. One's in the sigma system, but one is in the pi system, so that contributes two electrons. Each of the carbons contributes one electron, so a total of six. 4n plus 2, where n equals 1, so it should be aromatic. Let's look at the pi orbitals. So there's the lowest orbital, right? There's no antibonding nodes. Then there are two with antibonding nodes, one where the antibonding node goes across the room, and one where it bisects the room coming out. Okay. And then there are going to be ones with four antibonding nodes as you go around the ring. Okay, so those are very closely analogous, as you can see, to the orbitals we talked about in benzene. Okay, so furan is aromatic. Okay, now there's as I mentioned, this approach that derives 4n plus 2 is a very, very crude approach to quantum mechanics. Considers only the p orbitals and assumes that all overlap between adjacent orbitals is the same, and that no other overlaps exist. Okay, so if you want to try it just for fun, there you can go online at this thing that gives a link here, which I have on the other laptop here. So you can draw in a cyclic pi system, or a linear pi system for that matter, and see what this simple theory would give for the energy of the orbitals and their shapes. So let's try something. I'll put an atom here, and I'll make a bond by dragging. Okay, so that's ethylene, and we see its energy there. But let's make a seven-membered ring just for fun. Now, as I've drawn it, there's going to be a lot of difference in overlap between adjacent p orbitals, because some are much further than the others, right? But that doesn't enter into this theory at all. It assumes that they're all the same, and it says it would give that set of orbital energies. And you can also click on it to see what the shape would be. What would the very lowest orbital look like, do you think? Aviva, what do you think? Can't hear very well.
Zero
nodes as we go around. Let's look. Yeah, zero nodes. If you look down from the top, you see all the red of the orbital, the tops of the orbitals. Okay, how about the next one here? Somebody got an idea? Yeah?
Two nodes, one planar node.
Okay, let's look. Yep, there it is. It goes from 11 o'clock to 5 o'clock, roughly. Right? And notice it's bigger in the middle than on the ends, because the ones in the middle touch two neighbors. Okay? And then the other one here that says it has the same energy. Somebody got an idea about that one? Yeah. Right. So that's the one that goes from 2 o'clock to 9 o'clock or something like that. Again, big in the middle. Okay. And then with seven, there's going to be an odd electron, and that's one that, as you can see, has two nodes. One more or less vertical. That is four nodes as you go around, but two planar nodes, one more or less horizontal, one more or less vertical. So you can do this with all sorts of things to your heart's content and see what a very crummy theory would say about the stability of these things. And you can compare energies in this. In fact, if you click Show Data Table here, you can see what it says for each of the seven orbitals. Seven p atomic orbitals are in there. That means you're going to get 7 molecular orbitals out. And the first one has an energy of -2 in the units they're using, which are half as big as the ones we talked about. And it'll be and it has these coefficients as you go around. Okay, so that's there's no profundity here, but it's sort of fun. Okay, so this crude pi calculation shows this analogy between all carbon rings and heterocycle rings, because if we go over here, we can make one of these atoms, we can change it and make one of the atoms, like say this one, something else. We could make it a trivalent, you make it a trivalent nitrogen. So suppose it's a nitrogen, okay. So that's now a nitrogen that's trivalent. That means it has a hydrogen that's also bonded to, as all the carbons do, and it's contributing a pair of electrons to the pi system in its p orbital. And now we see it says it has these energies, and we can look at what the lowest one looks like. And if we're, I think something's wrong here. Shell molecule. I'm not going to take the time to figure out, because I think it should have come out the way. Change the valence of that and see if it comes out more like what I thought it should. Maybe I chose what do I want to do? Change this atom and make it divalent nitrogen. And I'm still perplexed, so it's going to take me a while to figure that one out. Let me show you one that I did ahead of time when I was thinking about it. Okay, so here's benzene and pyridine, where I put a nitrogen in there. That is that divalent nitrogen making 2 sigma bonds. So it has an unshared pair in the plane, and then coming out of the plane is a single electron of the nitrogen. Okay, so it's very much like benzene, as you can see in the energies of the orbitals, but they're shifted a little bit. Let's see if we can understand these differences. First, let's look at the very lowest energy orbital here, the one that's highlighted. Why is it lower in the nitrogen case than in the carbon case? Right? Yeah. Nitrogen has a lower energy atomic orbital, and you notice it's bigger on the right here, right, than the carbon. In the carbon, they're all even in the lowest energy, but if you put a nitrogen there, you put a little more electron density to get the best possible. So it's larger on nitrogen and a little bit lower in energy. Now, how about the next one? It's going to have 2 nodes as you go around the periphery, 1 nodal plane. There it is. Right? And now you notice those 2 are the same in energy. Why not? Why doesn't the nitrogen lower the energy of this one? Yeah. There's an electron density on the nitrogen. There's a node on the nitrogen. Okay, but the other orbital that had the same energy in benzene, so that one had a node on the nitrogen, an identical shape and identical energy. Incidentally, notice that energy is -1. It's the same as ethylene. Does it surprise you that the energy of that orbital is the same as ethylene? No, because what it is 2 ethylenes that don't interact with one another. It's because we assume there's no overlap except between the lines, ones we draw a line between. Okay, but well, it depends on what you. There's 1 planar node, but 2 nodes as you go around the periphery, right? So it depends on what you're talking about. Okay, now here's the horizontal node. Now you notice the one on nitrogen, the heterocycle, is lower in energy because it has a lot of density on the nitrogen. Okay, so high nitrogen density means a lower energy. Okay, now just last night I did this one, cyclodecapentaene. So 10 carbons in a ring. right? Now, bear in mind that this theory doesn't talk at all about how they're actually arranged geometrically, just that those p orbitals interact with one another and all interactions are the same, even though, as I've drawn it, they're different angles, different distances, and so on. Okay, now you notice it has the structure is just as in benzene here. Right, with one lowest energy orbital, then two that are equal, then two that are equal. Let's see if we can get, if we say anything about the shape of these orbitals. What's the very lowest orbital going to look like? It'll be the same everywhere, all the way around. So that one is going to be like that, same everywhere. Okay. Now, how about the next one or the next two? They're going to have two nodes as you go around the periphery, right? So there's going to be that one that has a vertical node, or two nodes as you go around. And then there's going to be, and notice about that one, that those are two independent things of four carbons in a row. So it's exactly the same as butadiene, right? And you notice it has the same shape that the orbitals in butadiene had. Small here, big in the middle, right? And the same energy that butadiene has, that the lowest orbital of butadiene has. Okay? And then if you look at this one, that one has a horizontal node. Okay? And now let's look at these. What are they going to have as you go around the periphery? How many nodes? Sudarshan? Four, right. So two nodal planes. Right? And there you have it. Right? And then here you have two nodal planes that make an X. Okay? Okay, now, yeah.
Why in the top left corner is one larger than the other?
Notice that these two touch one another. These two don't. So if you want to make it as low in energy as possible, you make these a little smaller. Okay? Good. That's a good observation. And notice that all the ones I've shown are below zero. They're all more favorable than an isolated p orbital. So you make all these as good as possible. If we showed these above, which you can do with the program if you want to, those will all be as bad as possible. Okay? Now, suppose we put an extra contact in here. Right? Made two of these carbons touch one another. For example, suppose we made, that would be naphthalene. Okay? So suppose we draw those two carbons together so they touch one another. So it'll be like that. Okay? Now, what effect is that going to have on the shape and energy of these orbitals if we have two benzene rings fused together? Okay? So those turn out to be the energies if you draw that picture in this program. Okay? And let's look, what's the lowest energy orbital going to look like now? Will they all be the same? No. So somebody tell me why they won't all be the same now. Yeah? The ones that touch one another can gain a little bit by getting bigger in the lowest energy orbital. Okay, so if we draw the lowest one, you see it's a little bigger where they touch. And the energy's gone down because we have an additional bonding interaction, favorable interaction. Okay, so that went down a little bit. Now, how about the next one? This one. So we're going to take this one and draw these two together. What difference will that make? Matt? It won't make any difference because there's no amplitude there, right? So it looks like that. And again, it's just like butadiene and the same energy. So the same as cyclodecapentaene before you drew them together, or the same as butadiene, which cyclodecapentaene was the same because it didn't have any interaction across the middle in this orbital, in this particular orbital. Okay, now the other one, what happens if you draw these two together? What happens? It's unfavorable, so it'll go up in energy, right? And those will get a little smaller. So if we go to that one, those got a little bit smaller. They were the biggest, the ones in the middle before. Mike?
Why? Okay, so the one right before, second lowest, why are the smaller ones smaller?
These? Because bear in mind, there's no interaction across here at all.
Right.
So this is just the same as if you have four in a row. But if you have four in a row, the ones in the middle will be bigger than the ones on the end, because the ones in the middle interact twice, and the ones on the end only interact once. So you want them to be a little bigger. And again, if you go to this show data table here, you can get how big this simple theory says each one of them is. Okay, so that one goes up a little bit. Now, how about that one that turns out to be the same in energy as it was before it drew together? Which one is that? We're going to bring the top and the bottom together here. Which one will stay the same energy as it was before? The one on the left or the one on the right? Robin, what do you say? I'm going to bring the top and the bottom so that they touch one another. The one on the left won't change its energy, right? Okay, so if we look at that one that has the same energy, it's this. And again, it's the same as butadiene. Or the cyclodecapentadiene before you drew it together, right? So that can go straight across. But the other one, when you bring it together, how about that? When you bring the top to touch the bottom, Ela? When you do this one and bring the top to touch the bottom, so that they're together over here, will the energy go up or down?
Down.
Right, and that gives this last one here, right? Okay, and what's that going to have the same energy as? Can anybody see? Notice its energy is one. That's not coincidental. It's three independent ethylenes, so it's the same energy as an ethylene, right? Because they're not interacting across these nodes. Okay, so you can really understand these things qualitatively. Okay, so and you know, if you want to, you could go into this program here and put eight rings together or whatever you wanted to, and it gets more complicated to understand. I wouldn't advise doing that, but if you want to have fun, you can do that kind of thing. Okay, so now cyclodecapentadiene, you can't make, or if you made it, it would be very, very reactive, because if you have just a circle with these dots on it, the bond angles are really big. So Beyer talked about the strain you'd have if you had really big bond angles. It would crumple up, okay? So they wouldn't have conjugation around the middle in order to get normal bond angles, right? It also turns out it would be very reactive. Okay, but how could you make it so it's planar? Well, maybe instead of having it on a ring, you could have two of them turn in by having this double bond and this double bond be cis, be trans instead of cis. Everybody see that? But you don't get out of the problem that way, because these two hydrogens would run into one another, right? So this was taken as a challenge by Vogel and Roth in Germany in 1963, and they decided that they would use a dichlorocarbene, which we talked about, add it to the double bond of a thing that really does have three double bonds along and hydrogens on the other atoms, and make this cyclopropane. Okay, they could take the chlorines off and have hydrogen there instead, so they have this, and then they take these hydrogens off. We aren't talking about how they did that. So now you have this, and that looks like a weird molecule. But if you broke the central bond, then you would have this with CH2 in between the two. And now if you look, so now there isn't, in this model, there isn't pi overlap between here and here because the CH2 is in the way. Okay? So what you now have is five double bonds around a ring. So that's a cyclodecapentadiene system, okay? But it's not so simple. And they actually made it and found out that it was, quote, aromatic. Now, it's not as simple as it looked, because it's not going to be flat. You can't have the two bonds, you can't have the CH2 with linear bonds from it. It can't fit in there. So what it really looks like is this. Here's here are the rings, the ones that the cyclodecapentaene back behind around here, and here's the CH2 across the top. Okay? But notice that all these p orbitals don't overlap equivalently, because the p orbital on this carbon is pointing this way, the p orbital carbon here this way, and so on. Okay, so they don't all have the same overlap. They don't even all have very good overlap. If you look, I tried to draw the lowest energy p orbital, the pi orbital, to show that would show the p orbitals of the atoms, but I couldn't in the short time get it. I think it's all mixed up with other things. But one that you can see is the HOMO minus 2, which you see as you go around the ring has a node in the back, a node in the front. So there's a p orbital here, a p orbital on the next carbon, but the p orbital on this carbon is pointing this way, right? It's not overlapping well. And then another, and this one is pointing the wrong way. So there's some overlap. You get something that's like that. But this is the organic chemists were frustrated by geometry in this case, right? In making something that really was a cyclodecapentaene, which is 4n plus 2, where n equals 2. 4 times 2 is 8, plus 2 is 10. This is 10. So it should be aromatic, but it's not. It doesn't really fulfill the simple-minded criteria that all the interactions are the same. But it is shown to be aromatic, but the way it's shown to be aromatic is not that it has 30 kilocalories of stabilization compared to what you'd think the way we talked about in benzene. It uses a spectroscopic criterion of aromaticity, which is proton magnetic resonance chemical shift, and we haven't talked about that. We'll talk about it next chapter after the exam. So we'll get to how they knew that this was indeed aromatic by some criterion. So, you know, chemists for a decade or two had a good time trying to make all sorts of different ring systems that had 4N plus 2 or that had 4N and were therefore not stable and very reactive. Okay. Another example that's easy to do of this generalization of aromaticity is cyclopentadiene, because if you treat it with base, you can pull a proton off. When you pull a proton off, that leaves the two electrons behind. So there's two electrons from one carbon, one from each of the other four. That makes 6. Should be especially stable, like benzene. And indeed, the pKa of this, it's more acidic than water. It's easier to pull a hydrogen off this carbon than it is to pull a hydrogen off oxygen. Right? That's pretty remarkable. Okay, and so it's 6 pi electrons, 4n plus 2. Now, compared to what? Of course, certainly compared to the allyl, forming the allyl anion that just has a double bond next door. But look at this one. Suppose we had cyclo-C7H8, cycloheptatriene. Okay. Now notice that if you didn't use molecular orbital theory and drew double bonds in here, there would be 5 different ways of drawing the double bonds, because any one of the carbons could be left with a minus charge and double bonds between the other two. Okay? So there'd be 5 resonance structures. So if you didn't like molecular orbital theory and liked resonance theory, you say, aha, this is stable because it has 5 resonance structures. Got me? What would you say about cycloheptatrienyl anion? How many resonance structures would it have? 7. But look at its pKa, 39, right, compared to 15. It's 24 powers of 10 stronger as an acid, right? And the reason is that this one has 8 pi electrons, 4n instead of 4n plus 2. So this anion is very stable. This one is rather unstable. Yeah?
Is it possible to create aromatic complexes of rings of atoms besides carbon?
Yeah, a particularly interesting example is boron, nitrogen, boron, nitrogen, boron, nitrogen. Right, because boron has one less electron, nitrogen has one more. So if you have 3 borons and 3 nitrogens, you have 6 pi electrons, and indeed that's very stable. Okay, or we take this one, and now this cation is an unusually stable cation with three benzene rings. We've already talked about benzylic being unusually stable. This is triply benzylic. So it's really unusual to be how easy it is for this thing to lose a hydrogen anion and become a cation, to give up a proton, right? So that's an unusually stable cation, right? But it at equilibrium, it pulls the hydrogen minus hydride away from this one to leave this one plus, right? This is even more stable as a cation, even though these R's are not phenyl rings, not conjugated at all. Why is this one so stable, or why would we say? It's a ring. How many pi electrons? 2. 4n plus 2, where n is 0. Cyclopropenyl cation is unusually stable. Right? And in fact, the same thing is true for cyclo-C7H8. You pull a hydrogen off that and get the cycloheptatrienyl cation, not anion. Now how many pi electrons? 6. 4n plus 2, right? So this one, it has a simple name, tropylium ion, this one. Right, and that's unusually easy to make, whereas its corresponding anion is unusually difficult to make. Yeah.
So when we're talking about the stabilization of these three ring products, I mean, what's the relative strengths of the stability of the aromaticity versus the stability of angle strain?
Well, but you don't get rid of the angle strain; it's still there, right? In fact, if anything, it's worse, because this wanted to be 109 degrees. This wants to be 120 degrees, right? So despite that, it's easy to form the cation. Okay, you can read about that in the book in section 13. Okay. Now, maybe more important than this stabilization of molecules by their aromaticity is stabilizations of transition states by the same thing, which makes some reactions unusually fast or unusually slow, because they have this kind of cyclic conjugation in the transition state that makes the transition state unusual. So it's not going to be intermediate between the starting material and the product. It's going to have its own special stability. So the Hammond principle won't apply properly. Okay, so there are a number of these reactions called pericyclic reactions, because the interaction goes around a ring, right? So we're comparing a chain with a ring when these two things that are at the end of the chain somehow react with one another. And we want to see whether the process of forming that reaction, of having that reaction, is unusually stable or unstable, because it involves a ring with 4n or 4n plus 2 electrons. So two examples I'm going to give are cycloaddition, the so-called Diels-Alder reaction after the people who invented it and got the Nobel Prize for it, and a thing called electrocyclic reactions. First, the cycloadditions. So we have, this looks a lot like benzene, except we're lacking two bonds. So that the ene and the diene can react with one another to form a ring, right? Which has now those 4n plus 2 pi electrons become 4 sigma electrons and 2 pi electrons. But before they interacted, before they came together, there was no interaction between the ethylene and the butadiene. After it, you don't have a pi system. But when they're just beginning to touch one another, you have those ends interacting. Okay, and you can get interesting reactions that way. Like, here's an example. This double bond reacts with this diene to give this and that, the isomer, but mostly that one. We're not going to talk about why you get more one than the other, although it's an interesting question. So it's an ene plus a diene to give a cyclohexene. So when you see cyclohexene and try to think, how could I make that? It comes from a Diels-Alder reaction. Or in this case, here's an ene, a diene, they come together to give cyclohexene. But there's an interesting feature of this one, which is because of the substitution, you can have two isomers. These could, the two ester groups could be cis to one another as drawn, or they could be trans to one another. When the reaction actually happens, you get a high yield of just one of those isomers, the cis, not the trans. Now that would happen, you notice, if the diene just came and sat, if the ethylene just came and sat down on the diene. So if they lifted up the ethylene, brought it over and touched this carbon to that carbon, this carbon to that carbon, then these two would be on the same side. And they are on the same side, right? And now, you might say, what would happen? Maybe, conceivably, this is more stable than the other one, although it doesn't seem reasonable, right? But in fact, if you start with the trans alkene, you get the trans one. So it's, again, as if they come over and just sit down, right? They make both bonds at once, not just making one bond, which would allow rotation, right, before the second bond was made, to give the more stable compound. Okay, or you can do it the other way. You can have the ene such that it can't rotate, but the diene such that it could. But again, you notice if you bring this now up and set it on top of this, so this carbon is on top of this one is on top of this one, then and make those bonds from here to here and here to here, the two hydrogens will be on the same side as they are in the product. But if you have this isomer of the hexadiene, then they'll be on opposite sides, and indeed that's true. So the reaction is stereospecific, making both bonds at once. Notice that one of these is a lot easier to do than the other. And the reason is that to make both bonds at once, this diene has to be in this shape, right? It can't be rotated around this single bond with this carbon out here. It'd be too far away. Okay? And that's easy for this one to touch here and here. But it's not easy for this one because the methyl running into the hydrogen makes it turn so it's over here. So it takes a lot more energy to get to the transition state for this one because you have to turn it to this less stable geometry. Okay? Or there are other examples like using an acetylene instead of a simple alkene, and now you get a cyclohexadiene as the product, leaving over one of the double bonds. Okay, or this one where you have a ring and you get these compounds. Okay, or even this one, where notice it's not even all carbons in the ring you're making; it has an oxygen. Okay, so there are lots of examples of this ene and diene coming together in a Diels-Alder reaction, or indeed going the other direction. Sometimes the starting materials are more stable than the product, in which case the reaction goes the other direction, but again unusually fast because it's the transition state that has this special stability. Now let's just look at the orbitals that are involved. They're not going to surprise you for this, okay? Or here's the transition state. Both bonds being formed at the same time. So a front view of the diene and the alkene and a side view, right? Here's the HOMO of the alkene, one node, so blue red. Here's the LUMO pi star of the alkene, so it's set up to overlap both in this view, and you can see it in this view. And again, these two don't touch these that are in front, they touch the ones in behind because the ethylene is back a bit, as you see in this view. It's not touching across here. Okay? And then that's what at the transition state, that's what it looks like. Okay? And if you look at the LUMO in front with two nodes in the diene and the HOMO in back, those mix too. So we're making two bonds at the same time as we've seen before. Okay, and then this is the motion in the transition state. You see it's just It's just a smooth motion of making the two bonds at the same time. Now, how about taking two alkenes and having them react with one another to make a cyclobutene? A cyclobutane. Does that seem reasonable? Matt, what do you say? Are we going to get good homo-lumo mixing? What's the homo going to be of this one? Of an alkene? Pi. What's the lumo here going to be? How about the overlap? Nothing. Zero. Right? So the homo will overlap with the homo, the lumo with the lumo, but you're not going to get any stabilization from that. That's going to be just bad. So, no, you're not. Now, of course, you might say it won't go that way because this one is strained. But then it should at least go backwards. But it doesn't go either way. Right? Because the homo and the lumo are orthogonal, as Matt said. On the other hand, if you do it in the presence of light, then it's possible to do it. What does light have to do with it? Yeah. Right, it'll take an electron that's in the homo of a molecule and put it in the lumo. So now there's an electron that has the right overlap with the other double bond, and the other way too. And so that it, with light, it's possible to do this because you shift an electron from a homo to a lumo. Okay, and here's an example that's important in some kinds of cancer creation. You have these rings, these heteroaromatic rings in the DNA, and these double bonds next to one another normally wouldn't react with one another to make a four-membered ring. But UV irradiation can cause you to make this four-membered ring, which links two of the bases together, and then you can't do the normal kinds of DNA stuff. So you make mistakes, and this is, can be important in carcinogenesis, why you wear sunscreen and so on, at least one of the reasons you wear sunscreen. Okay, so those are some examples of cycloaddition, and there are many, many more talked about in the book, but we're not going to take the time to go into them right now. But then there's another kind called electrocyclic reactions. These cycloadditions are taking two pi systems and bringing them together to make a ring. Another way to make a ring is to take something that's not a ring and just bring the ends together. Right? So those are called electrocyclic reactions, like this. Okay? So you change the three pairs of electrons in a pi system, in a linear pi system. It's, of course, the line isn't straight, but we say linear because it's not a ring, right? The two on the end don't overlap. But if we make them overlap, then they become a single bond. But doing that requires a twist at the end. So the two at the end that are p orbitals twist to come together and overlap. Okay. Now, they can twist two ways. They could overlap these p orbitals by going like that, or they could overlap by going like that. Okay. The top could touch the top, or the top could touch the bottom when they come together, depending on how they twist. And this is controlled by these orbital interactions. So here on the left is one where they're twisting the same way. That's called conrotation. On the right, they're starting flat and then twisting opposite directions. That we're looking at the hydrogens, right? So they can twist like this, conrotation, or they can twist like this, disrotation. Okay, and you see that the disrotation causes top to touch top, and the conrotation, and that's called Huckel. Because it's like Huckel's rule, that you have a ring of things all overlapping equally with one another. Okay? Now, we need a name for the other one, the one that's called conrotation. If we're going to call this disrotation Huckel, what are we going to call conrotation? Where top touches bottom. Okay? You know what that is? What? It's a Möbius strip, which has the interesting topological property, right, that the top comes around and touches the bottom. Okay? I think you've probably played with these before. You know, it's neat. You can, if you cut them in half down the middle, then you get two rings that are hooked together and so on. They're a lot of fun. Okay, but at any rate, that's called, for that reason, it's called Möbius, when top touches bottom. So now, on the right, for Möbius overlap, obviously, the lowest the lowest energy orbital is going to have all the same sign going around, right? But now you can't get that if you twist the wrong way. If you twist in a Möbius style with con rotation, you generate a new node that way. Right? So we can look at how the energies change in going from the chain to the ring if we use that simple program, right? But it assumes that the interaction is going to be the same everywhere, like Huckel, right? So we can see that if we start with those six pi electrons, no node, one node, two nodes, three nodes, four nodes, five nodes, right? And make it into a ring, then the lowest energy one goes down in energy. We've talked about this. Okay, and here it is in this case, right? But in this case, as you go around, the red on this carbon touches the blue on this carbon, we've got a node. So that one, although this one is going to go down in energy, and this psi 1, the lowest energy orbital here, is going to become the new sigma bond, ultimately, after you get past the transition state. In this case, Psi 1 is going to become Psi 1. What it's going to change into is that to lower its energy, these will go away, right? And you'll get a new pi orbital in back, which is the one with no nodes. So it becomes Psi 1 of this product system. Okay. On the other hand, if you take Psi 2, right, the one that has a node here, then it becomes this, right? Which is, it goes up in energy because it's an antibonding interaction that you're creating. And here you can see that antibonding interaction that you're creating, and it's going to give Psi 2, the one with a node, not the pi orbital that has no nodes, right? But on this side, it's making a new bond by that interaction, by this touching the bottom of that, right? So that's the one that becomes the sigma orbital as it goes through the transition state. Now, if you go to the next one, Psi 3, and you go across here, it goes down in energy because now the two ends, when you touch top to top, is favorable, and you get a favorable interaction. Right, and that's those. But on this side, this is the one that's most interesting, right? Because it doesn't become Psi 3, doesn't become Psi 2. You can see that it's not generating a node here, which is what you would have in the second pi orbital of this system. There would be a node here, right? Plus, plus, minus, minus. You're not getting that node. That one goes to become Psi 3. So you have three pairs of electrons you're talking about. On the right, two of them go down and one goes up. But on the left, one of them goes down and two go up, and this one goes way up to an orbital that normally wouldn't be occupied. So this is very unfavorable. So this doesn't happen. You have disrotation, not conrotation. Right? This, incidentally, is how the other orbitals behave, but we don't care about those because they don't have electrons in them. Okay, so this is the motion in the transition state then that actually occurs that way. And you see it's just a smooth motion where they come together and by disrotation and form the new bond. Derek?
If you had logical steric groups, would that prevent the rotation?
Yeah, you could do or you could build things into other rings that make it impossible to do it, and then that stops the reaction. If all you can do is conrotation, not disrotation, then you don't get a reaction. Actually, there's something relevant to that coming up very soon. So here's a case of disrotation that starts with that particular isomer of the triene, right? And it puts, that results in the two methyl groups being on the same side after the rotation. So it's this rotation for 6 pi electrons. But if you have 4 pi electrons, as involved here in the bonds that are changing, 4 electrons, right? Then it goes the other direction, right? And in the textbook we used last year, it was drawn this way. But in fact, it was drawn as if it happened this way, but in fact it happens that way, because you want to get rid of the ring strain. But the important thing is not the strain of the starting material or the transition state. The important thing that we're talking about is the special energy in the transition state, where you have all these orbitals touching one another at once. Notice in the product, in this one, they're not all overlapping, because this new bond is orthogonal to the pi electrons here. It's only at the transition state that you have interaction all the way around the ring. And that one turns out to be conrotatory with 8 pi electrons. So it goes back and forth. When this was first being talked about, they talked about the cars that were made. U.S. cars, the windshield wipers went like this. And in European cars, they went like this. So one of them was, the European was conrotatory, and the U.S. was disrotatory. Now they don't do it that way anymore, I think. So it's con for 4n and dis for 4n plus 2. Okay, so here we have it. And there are the two transition states shown for the one with 4 electrons and the one with 6 electrons, and one's conrotatory and the other's disrotatory. One, the bottom prefers to touch the top, and the other, the top prefers to touch the top. And I show the HOMO and LUMO there, don't worry. Now let's see what time we have. 1 minute. Yeah, this doesn't take long to show this. So we talked about Dewar benzene before, yeah. Well, it depends on how many electrons, right? Conrotation is if you have 4n electrons. Disrotation if you have 4n plus 2 electrons. So it depends on which system you're talking about, whether it's con or dis, right? So actually, let's cut it here, not put this on the exam. How many people want this to be on the exam? How many people would prefer I stop here? Vox populi. Okay. So we'll have a review session tonight. The registrar still hasn't told me what room. I'll email you what the room is. Pardon me? The review session will be 8 to 10. Yeah.